Chapter 13. A scandal, said the woman with the emeralds, who was sitting opposite Kate Hegstrom. Her eyes sparkled. A wonderful scandal. All Paris is laughing about it. Did you have any idea that Louis was a homosexual? Surely not. None of us knew. He kept it very well covered up. Lena de Neuburg was considered his official mistress. And now imagine. A week ago he returned from Rome 3 days earlier than he had said, and went to Nicky's apartment the same evening, intending to surprise him. And whom did he find there?
His wife, Ravitch said.
The woman with the emeralds glanced up. Suddenly she looked as if she had just been told that her husband was bankrupt. You already know the story? She asked.
No, but it must be like that.
I don't understand. She stared at Ravitch, irritated. After all, it was most improbable.
That's just why.
Kate Hegstrom smiled. Dr. Ravitch has a theory, Daisy. He calls it the systematics of chance. According to it, the most improbable is always practically the most logical.
That's interesting.
Daisy smiled politely and entirely uninterestedly. It wouldn't have led to anything, she continued calmly, if Louis had not made a terrific scene. He was completely beside himself.
Now he is living in the Crillon.
Wants to divorce her. Both are waiting for evidence. She leaned back in her chair, full of expectation. What do you say?
Kate Hegstrom looked quickly at Ravitch. He was studying a branch of orchids which stood on the table between hat boxes and a basket of fruit containing grapes and peaches, white flowers like butterflies with lascivious red-spotted hearts.
Unbelievable, Daisy, she said. Really unbelievable.
Daisy enjoyed her triumph.
I'm sure you couldn't have known that beforehand, could you? She asked Ravitch.
He carefully put the branch back into the narrow crystal vase.
No, certainly not that.
Daisy nodded in satisfaction and picked up her bag, her compact, and her gloves.
I've got to go. I'm late now. Louise is having a cocktail party. Her minister is coming. All sorts of rumours are going around.
She rose.
Oh, by the way, Ferdy and Marta have broken up again. She has sent her jewellery back to him, for the third time now. It still impresses him, the poor fool. He thinks he is loved for his own sake. He'll return everything to her, and another piece as a reward, as always. He doesn't know, but she has already selected what she'd like to have at Ostertag's. He always buys there. A ruby brooch, big square stones, best pigeon blood. She is smart.
She kissed Kate Hegstrom.
Adieu, my lamb. Now you are at least somewhat au courant. Can't you get out of here soon?
She looked at Ravitch.
He caught Kate Hegstrom's look.
Not right away, he said. Sorry.
He helped Daisy into her coat. It was a dark mink without a collar. A coat for Joan, he thought. Daisy made a very good appearance, slim, exquisite, with a short nose and delicate joints, well-groomed and entirely without sex appeal. Why don't you come for tea with Kate? She said. Only a few people are there on Wednesdays, so we can chat undisturbed. I'm very much interested in operations.
Gladly.
Ravitch closed the door behind her and came back.
Beautiful emeralds, he said.
Kate Hegstrom laughed. Well, that was my life before, Ravitch. Can you understand that?
Yes, why not? Wonderful if one can do it. It gives you protection against so much.
I can't understand it any longer.
She got up and walked carefully to her bed.
Ravitch smiled. It makes very little difference where one lives, Kate. Some places are more comfortable than others, but it is never important. The only important thing is what one makes of it.
She put her long, beautiful legs onto the bed. Everything is inconsequential, she said, when you have been in bed for a few weeks and can walk again.
Ravitch took a cigarette. You don't have to stay here any longer if you don't want to. You can live in the Lancaster if you take a nurse with you.
Kate Hegstrom shook her head. I'll stay here until I can travel. Here I am protected against too many daisies.
Throw them out when they come, Ravitch said. Nothing is more tiring than listening to gossip.
She stretched herself cautiously on her bed. Would you believe that Daisy is a wonderful mother in spite of her gossiping? She is bringing up her two children magnificently.
Well, that can happen, Ravitch declared, unimpressed.
Kate Hegstrom smiled. She drew the blanket over her. A hospital is like a convent, she said.
you learn to appreciate the simplest things again. Walking, breathing, seeing.
Yes. Happiness lies all around us. We only have to pick it up.
She looked at him. I really mean it.
So do I, Kate. Only the simple things never disappoint us. And as far as happiness is concerned, you can't start too far down.
Jeannot was lying on his bed, a heap of pamphlets scattered over his blanket.
Why don't you put the light on? Ravitch asked.
I can still see well enough. I have good eyes.
The pamphlets contained descriptions of artificial legs. Jeannot had got them together in every way he could. His mother had brought him the last ones. He showed Ravitch a wonderfully coloured folder. Ravitch turned on the light.
This is the most expensive, Jeannot said.
It is not the best, Ravitch replied.
But it is the most expensive. I'll explain to the insurance company that I must have it. Naturally, I don't want it at all. Only the insurance company shall pay for it. I want a wooden stump and the money.
The insurance company has its own physicians who check on everything, Jeannot. The boy straightened up.
Do you think they won't allow me a leg?
Oh, they will. Perhaps not the most expensive. But they won't give you any money. They'll see to it that you really get it.
Then I'll have to take it and sell it immediately. Of course, I'll not get the full price. Do you think 20% off is enough? I'll offer it first for 10. Maybe we can talk with the shopkeeper in advance. What does it matter to the insurance company whether I take the leg? They must pay. Nothing else really matters to them. Or does it?
Of course not. You can try.
It would amount to something. We could buy the counter and the equipment for a small creamery with that money.
Jeannot smiled cunningly.
Thank God. A leg like that with its joint and everything else is pretty expensive. A precision job. That's fine.
Has someone from the insurance company already been here?
No, not yet about the leg and the compensation. Only about the operation and the hospital. Do we have to hire a lawyer? What do you think? It was a red light, I'm quite positive. The police...
The nurse came in with the supper. She put it on the table beside Jeannot. The boy did not say anything until she had gone.
They give you a lot to eat here, he declared then. I've never had so much. I can't finish it all by myself. My mother always comes and eats the rest. There is enough for both of us. She's saving money this way. The room here costs a great deal anyway.
Well, that's paid by the insurance company. It makes no difference where you are. A gleam flitted across the grey face of the boy.
I spoke to Dr. Weber. He'll give me 10%. He'll send the bill for what it costs to the insurance company. They pay it, but he'll let me have the 10% in cash.
You're efficient, Jeannot.
You've got to be efficient when you are poor.
That's right. Are you in pain?
In the foot I don't have any more.
Those are the nerves which are still there.
I know. It's funny just the same, to have pain in something that isn't there any more. Maybe the sole of my leg is still there.
Jeannot grinned. He had cracked a joke. Then he removed the lid from his supper plates.
Soup, chicken, vegetable, pudding. That's something for Mother. She likes chicken. We didn't often have it at home.
He leaned back comfortably.
Sometimes I wake up at night and think we have to pay for everything here ourselves. That's how one thinks at night, the first moment. Then I remember that I'm lying here like the son of rich people, and I have the right to ask for everything and can ring for the nurses and they must come, and other people must pay for all that. Wonderful, isn't it?
Yes, Ravitch said. Wonderful. He sat in the examination room of the Osiris. Is there still someone there? He asked.
Yes,
Leonie said.
Yvonne, she is the last.
Send her in. You're all right, Leonie. Yvonne was 25 years old, fleshy, blonde, with a broad nose and the short, chubby hands and feet of many whores. She swayed into the room complacently and lifted the sleazy silk rag she wore. There, Ravitch said, over there.
Can't it be done here?
Yvonne asked. No, why? Instead of answering, Yvonne turned silently around and showed her hefty behind. It was blue with welts. She must have received a terrific thrashing from someone. I hope your client paid you well for it, Ravitch said. This is no joke. Yvonne shook her head.
Not a centime, doctor. It was not a client.
Then it was fun. I didn't know you liked that. Yvonne again shook her head.
a satisfied, mysterious smile on her face. Ravitch noticed that she enjoyed the situation. She felt important. "I'm not a masochist," she said. She was proud of knowing the word.
"What was it, then? A row?"
Yvonne waited a second. "Love," she said then, and stretched her shoulders voluptuously.
"Was he jealous?"
"Yes," Yvonne beamed.
"Does it hurt very much?"
"Oh, something like this doesn't hurt." She sat down carefully. "Do you know, Doctor, that Madame Roland at first didn't want to let me work? Just 1 hour, I told her. Try it for only 1 hour. You'll see. And now, with the blue behind, I have much more success than ever before."
"Why?"
"I don't know. There are fellows who are mad about it. It excites them. In the last 3 days I have made 250 francs more. How long will it show?"
"At least 2 or 3 weeks.
Yvonne clicked her tongue.
"If this goes on, I'll be able to buy a fur coat. Fox, perfectly matched catskins."
"If it doesn't last long enough, your friend can easily help you out with another sound thrashing."
"Oh, that he won't do," Yvonne said vivaciously. "He's not like that. He's not a calculating beast, you know. He only does it out of passion, when it comes over him. Otherwise I could beg him on my knees, but he wouldn't do it."
"Character?" Ravitch glanced up.
"You're all right, Yvonne." She picked herself up.
"Then the work can go on. An old one is already waiting for me downstairs, a man with a grey pointed beard. He always comes after these visits, to be the first, because he wants to be sure. I've shown him my streaks. He's wild about them. He has no say at home, that's why. So he dreams about how he would like to thrash his old lady, I believe."
She burst into clear, bell-like laughter.
"Doctor, the world is funny, isn't it?"
She swayed out of the room complacently.
Ravitch put aside the things he had used and stepped to the window. The dusk hung silver-grey above the buildings. The bare trees rose through the asphalt like the black hands of the dead. One had at times seen such hands in buried trenches. He opened the window and looked out. The hour of unreality hovering between day and night. The hour of love in the small hotels, for those who were married and at evening presided with dignity over their families. The hour of aperitifs. The hour in which the earth caught its breath. The hour in which the Italian women in the lowlands of Lombardy were already beginning to say Felicissima notte. The hour of despair and the hour of dreams. He closed the window. Suddenly the room seemed to be much darker. Shadows had fluttered in and crouched in the corners, full of silent chatter. The bottle of cognac which Roland had brought up sparkled on the table like a polished topaz. Ravitch remained standing for a moment, then he went down. The music box was playing, and the big room was already brightly illuminated. The girls were sitting in their short pink silk chemises in two rows on the hassocks. They all had their breasts bare. The customers wanted to see what they were buying. Half a dozen had arrived, mostly middle-aged tradesmen. They were the cautious experts. They knew when the examinations took place and came about this time to be positively sure of not risking a clap. Yvonne was with her old gentleman. He sat at a table with a Dubonnet in front of him. She stood beside him, one foot on a chair, and drank champagne. She received 10% for each bottle. The man must be really crazy to spend so much. That was something only foreigners did. Yvonne was aware of it. She had an air of a benevolent circus trainer. "Do you want another Calvados?" Ravitch asked.
Joan nodded.
"Yes, let me have another."
He called the maitre d'hotel.
"Have you still older Calvados than this?"
"Isn't this good?"
"It is, but maybe you have still another in your cellar."
"I'll see." The waiter went to the cashier's desk where the proprietress was asleep with her cat. From there he disappeared through a ground glass door into the room where the owner lived among his accounts. After a while the waiter returned with an important, composed air and went downstairs into the cellar without glancing at Ravitch.
"It seems to be working."
The waiter returned with a bottle which he held in his arms like a baby. It was a dirty bottle, not one of the picturesquely encrusted bottles for tourists, but simply one that was dirty from lying in the cellar for many years. He opened it cautiously, sniffed the cork, and then fetched two big glasses.
"Sir,"
he said to Ravitch, and poured a few drops. Ravitch took the glass and inhaled the odour. Then he drank, leaned back, and nodded. The waiter returned his nod solemnly and filled both glasses a third full. "Just try this," Ravitch said to Joan. She took a sip and put the glass down. The waiter watched her. She looked at Ravitch, astonished.
"I've never tasted anything like that before," she said, and sipped a second time. "One doesn't drink it, one just inhales it."
"That's it, madame," the waiter declared with satisfaction. "You've grasped it."
"Ravitch," Joan said, "there's danger in what you're doing. After this Calvados, I'll never drink any other kind."
"Oh, yes, you'll drink other kinds, too.
But I'll dream of this one."
"Fine. It'll make you a romantic. A Calvados romantic."
"But then I won't like the other any more."
"On the contrary, it will taste even better than it really is. It will be a Calvados with the longing for another Calvados. That in itself makes it less ordinary." Joan laughed.
"That's nonsense. You know it yourself."
"Naturally it's nonsense, but we are living on nonsense, not on the meagre bread of facts. Otherwise what would happen to love?"
"What has that to do with love?"
"A great deal. It takes care of its continuance. Otherwise we would love once only and reject everything else later. But as it is, the remnant of desire for the man one leaves behind, or by whom one is left behind, becomes the halo around the head of the new one. To have lost someone before in itself gives the new one a certain romantic glamour, the hallowed old illusion." Joan looked at him.
"I find it abominable to hear you talk like this."
"I too."
"You shouldn't do it, not even in fun. It turns a miracle into a trick."
Ravitch did not answer.
"And it sounds as if you were already tired and were thinking about leaving me."
Ravitch looked at her with a remote tenderness. "You need never think about that, Joan. When it comes to that, you will be the one who leaves me, not I you. That much is sure."
She set her glass down hard. "What nonsense! I'll never leave you. Are you trying to talk me into something again?"
Those eyes, Ravitch thought, as if behind them lightning were flashing, soft, reddish lightning out of a thunderstorm of candles.
"Joan," he said, "I don't want to talk you into anything. I'll tell you the story of the wave and the rock. It's an old story, older than we are. Listen. Once upon a time there was a wave who loved a rock in the sea. Let us say in the Bay of Capri. The wave foamed and swirled around the rock. She kissed him day and night. She embraced him with her white arms. She sighed and wept and besought him to come to her. She loved him and stormed about him, and in that way slowly undermined him. And one day he yielded, completely undermined, and sank into her arms." He took a sip of Calvados.
"And?" Joan asked.
"And suddenly he was no longer a rock to be played with, to be loved, to be dreamed of. He was only a block of stone at the bottom of the sea, drowned in her. The wave felt disappointed and deceived, and looked for another rock."
"And?" Joan looked at him suspiciously.
"What does that mean? He should have remained a rock."
"The wave always says that. But things that move are stronger than immovable things. Water is stronger than rocks." She made an impatient gesture.
"What has all this to do with us? That's only a story without meaning, or you're making fun of me again. When it comes to that, you'll leave me. That's the one thing I'm sure of."
"That," Ravitch said, laughing, "will be your last statement when you go. You'll explain to me that I've left you, and you'll find reasons for it, and you'll believe them. And you'll be right before the oldest law court in the world, nature." He called the waiter. "Can we buy this bottle of Calvados?"
"You want to take it with you?"
"Exactly."
"Sir, that's against our rules. We don't sell bottles."
"Ask the patron." The waiter returned with the newspaper. It was the Paris Soir.
"The patron will make an exception," he explained, as he pressed the cork tight and wrapped the bottle in the Paris Soir, after first removing the sports page and putting it, folded, into his pocket.
"Here, sir. You had best keep it in a dark, cool place. It comes from the estate of the patron's grandfather."
"Good."
Ravitch paid.
He took the bottle and looked at it. Sunshine that has lain all through a hot summer and a blue fall on apples in an ancient wind-swept orchard of Normandy, come with us. We need you. There is a storm raging somewhere in the universe. They stepped out into the street. It had begun to rain. Joan stopped.
Ravitch, do you love me?
Yes, Joan. More than you think. She leaned against him.
Sometimes it doesn't look like it.
On the contrary, otherwise I'd never tell you such things.
You'd better tell me other things.
He looked into the rain and smiled. Love is not a pond into which one can always look for one's reflection, Joan. Love has its ebb and flow, and wrecks and sunken cities and octopuses and storms and chests with golden pearls. But the pearls lie deep.
I don't know anything about that. Love is belonging together. Forever.
Forever, he thought. The old fairy tale, when one can't even hold the minute. Shivering, she buttoned her coat.
I wish it were summer, she said. I've never longed for it as I have this year.
She took her black evening gown out of the wardrobe and flung it on the bed.
How I hate this sometimes. Always the same black dress, always the same Scheherazade, always the same, always the same.
Ravitch looked up. He didn't say anything.
Don't you understand? She asked.
Oh, yes.
Why don't you take me away from here, beloved?
Where to?
Anywhere.
Ravitch unwrapped the bottle of Calvados and drew the cork. Then he fetched a glass and filled it. Come, he said. Drink this. She shook her head.
It doesn't help. Sometimes it doesn't help to drink. Sometimes nothing helps. I don't want to go there tonight, to those idiots.
Stay here.
And then?
Phone that you are sick.
Nevertheless, I'll have to go tomorrow. It will be even worse then.
You could be sick for a few days.
That's just the same.
She looked at him.
What can it be? What's wrong with me, Ravitch? Is it the rain? Is it this wet darkness? Sometimes it's like lying in a coffin, those grey afternoons that drown me. I had forgotten it a while ago. I was happy being with you in that little restaurant. Why did you have to talk about things like leaving and being left? I don't want to know or hear anything about that. It makes me sad. It holds pictures out to me which I don't want to see, and it makes me restless. I know you don't mean it this way, but it hits me. It hits me, and then the rain and darkness come. You don't know that. You are strong.
Strong? Ravitch repeated.
Yes.
How do you know that?
You have no fear.
I haven't any fear left. That's not the same, Joan. She wasn't listening to what he said. She walked across the room with her long strides, for which the room was too small. She always walked as if she were walking against the non-existent wind.
I want to get away from all this, she said. Away from this hotel, this nightclub with those greedy eyes. Away from it all.
She stopped.
Ravitch, must we live the way we live? Can't we live like other people who love each other? Can't we be together and have things that belong to us around us, and evenings and security, instead of these suitcases and empty days and these hotel rooms where one is a stranger?
Ravitch's face was indecipherable. There it comes, he thought. He had expected it any time. Do you actually see that for us, Joan?
Why not? Other people have it. Warmth, belonging together, a few rooms, and when one closes one's door the restlessness is gone and it doesn't creep through the walls as it does here.
Do you really see that? Ravitch repeated.
Yes.
A neat little apartment with a neat little bourgeois life, a neat little security on the edge of the abyss, do you really see that?
You could just as well call it something else, she said defiantly, something not quite so contemptuous. When one is in love, one finds other names for it.
It remains the same, Joan. Do you really see that? Neither of us is made for it. She stopped.
I am.
Ravitch smiled. There were tenderness, irony, and a shadow of sadness in it.
Joan, he said, not you either.
You even less than I. But that isn't the only reason. There is still another.
Yes, she replied with bitterness. I know.
No, Joan, you don't know. But I'll tell you, it will be better so. You shouldn't think what you are thinking now. She still stood before him. Let's get it over quickly, he said, and don't ask many questions afterwards. She did not answer. Her face was empty. Suddenly it was again the face she had had formerly. He took her hands. I live illegally in France, he said. I have no papers. That's the real reason. That's why I'll never be able to rent an apartment, nor can I marry if I love someone. I need proofs of my identity and visas for that. I don't have them. I'm not even permitted to work. I must do it clandestinely. I can never live otherwise than now. She stared at him. Is that true? He shrugged his shoulders. There are a couple of thousand people who are living in a similar way. I'm sure you know that, too. Everyone knows it nowadays. I am one of them. He smiled and let her hands go. A man without a future, as Morozov calls it. Yes, but I'm even very well off. I work, I live, I have you. What are a few inconveniences? And the police? The police don't bother too much about it. If they happened to catch me, I'd only be deported, that's all. But that's improbable. And now go and telephone your nightclub that you won't come. We'll have this evening for ourselves, the whole evening. Tell them that you're sick. If they want a certificate, I'll get you one from Weber. She did not go. Deported, she said, as if she could understand it only slowly. Deported? From France? And then you would be away? For a short while only. She did not seem to hear him. Away, she repeated. Away? And what would I do then? Ravitch smiled. Yes, he said. What would you do then? She sat there, leaning on her elbows as if paralyzed. Joan, Ravitch said, I have been here for 2 years and it has not happened. Her face did not change. And if it should happen in spite of that? Then I would be back soon, in a week or two. It's like a trip, nothing more. And now call the Scheherazade. She got up hesitantly. What shall I say? That you have bronchitis. Speak a little hoarsely. She walked over to the telephone. Then she came quickly back. Ravitch. He freed himself carefully. Come, he said, let's forget it. It's really a blessing. It protects us against becoming rentiers of passion. It keeps love pure. It remains a flame and doesn't become the stove for the family cabbage. Now go and telephone. She lifted the receiver. He looked at her while she spoke. At first her heart wasn't in it. She still looked at him as if he were going to be arrested immediately. But then she began gradually to lie, easily and casually. She was actually lying more than was necessary. Her face became alive and reflected the pain in her chest which she was describing. Her voice became more tired and steadily hoarser, and finally was punctuated by coughs. She was no longer looking at Ravitch. She looked straight ahead and was completely absorbed in her role. He watched her silently, and then drank a big gulp of Calvados. No complexes, he thought. A mirror which gives a wonderful reflection, but which holds nothing. Joan put the receiver down and smoothed her hair. They believed everything. You did it first rate. They said I should stay in bed, and if it wasn't completely gone by tomorrow, for heaven's sake, stay there then. You see? That takes care of tomorrow, too. Yes, she said, gloomy for a second, if you take it that way. Then she came to him. You frightened me, Ravitch. Tell me it isn't true. You often say things just for the sake of saying them. Tell me it isn't true, not the way you said it.
It isn't true.
She leaned her head on his shoulder. It can't be true. I don't want to be alone again. I'm nothing when I'm alone. You must stay with me. I'm nothing without you, Ravitch.
Ravitch looked down at her. Joan, he said, sometimes you are like the janitor's daughter, and sometimes Diana of the woods, and sometimes both.
Her head did not move on his shoulder. What am I now? He smiled. Diana with the silver bow, invulnerable and deadly. You should tell me that more often.
Ravitch remained silent. She had not understood what he meant, nor was it necessary.
She took what she liked, the way she liked, and did not bother about anything else. But wasn't it just this that attracted him? Whoever wanted someone who was like himself, and who would ask for morals in love? That was an invention of the weak, and a dirge for the victims.
"What are you thinking of?" she asked.
"Nothing."
"Nothing?"
"Something," he said.
"We'll go away from here for a few days, Joan. There where the sun is, to Cannes or Antibes. To hell with all caution, to hell too with all dreams of three-room apartments and the vulture cry of the middle class, and to hell with the darkness and the cold and the rain. Aren't you Budapest and the odor of blooming chestnuts at night when the entire city, hot and longing for summer, is sleeping with the moon?" She had straightened up quickly.
"Do you really mean that?"
"Yes."
"But the police?"
"To hell with the police. It is no more dangerous there than here. Resorts for tourists are not so painstakingly checked, particularly at the expensive hotels. Have you never been there?"
"No, never. I was only in Italy and on the Adriatic. When are we leaving?"
"In 2 or 3 weeks. That's the best time."
"But have we any money?"
"We have some. In 2 weeks we'll have enough."
"We could live in a small pension,"
she said hastily. "You don't belong in a small pension. You belong in a hole like this, or a first-rate hotel. We'll live in the Cap Hotel in Antibes. Besides, it's very sensible. Those hotels are entirely safe, and no one asks for papers there. In the next few days I have to carve open the stomach of someone of importance, a governor or minister. He'll provide the money we still need." Joan got up quickly. Her face was changed.
"Come," she said. "Let me have more of that old Calvados, Ravitch. It really seems to be a Calvados of dreams."
She went to the bed and lifted the evening gown.
"My God! And I only have these 2 old black rags!"